just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Talking about my generation.
Hello and good evening and welcome to the 12th edition of the ETIMS podcast. Joining me tonight, Bedford Falls, are Desi Mond.
Good evening, folks.
And Ralph Malf.
How you doing? You all right?
Yes, great, great, great. So here we are on our 12th edition, which is the number famously worn by Brian McLaughlin every time he played for Celtic, unless he gave number 14 that week. And tonight on our subjects, we're going to talk about the transfer window, the ins, the outs, the outs, the outs, the outs, the outs, the contract rebels and all that kind of good stuff. Talk about our prospects for the rest of the season. Is a quadruple on? Are we going to Wembley? Are we going to Wembley and Hampden in the same season? Here's hoping. There's some things come through from our devoted follower on Twitter who wants us to talk about standing areas at Celtic Park. We're going to have the good, the bad and the ugly. That's a new thing, so that makes you hang on. So get excited about it. And we're going to talk about we've obviously got our Twitter bag out there and we're asking, a bit of comedy about Mr. Green, who's comedy in himself. But before we get into all of that, we're going to hand over to Ralph Malf maybe to say a few words on our dearly departed great Celt, Sean Fallon.
It was obviously a very sad news when he passed away. And with Celtic being a kind of a family for all of us, your family's a great link with the past. And when he passed away this week, you felt that a great big chunk of your own kind of personal links with the club had gone. I grew up in the early 70s, and Fallon was kind of the legend, along with Jogstein, obviously. And it was like a bit of my own mortality went as well. I think we realise we're all getting older, and looking at some of the lines as well in the paper. And when you see them up at the ground, you realise that we're all going down the same path.
Indeed, indeed. I think
that's
some
depressing,
of the
isn't it?
Some of the tributes, especially for, you know, I didn't grow up in the early 70s, and in fact wasn't born in the early 70s, but obviously Sean Fallon, his name carries himself, maybe second only to Steen in the eyes of some, in terms of his legend with the club, and sometimes a bit forgotten, because, you know, you don't get the iconic picture of him holding the trophy the way you have with McNeil and stuff. But some of the tributes this week that I've read online particularly, and I think The Guardian had a fantastic obituary for him as well. We're really quite touching and gave you the measure of the man. So yeah, it's sad, but as we know, things have to go on.
The Celtic TV on YouTube put on the interview that he did with Jim Craig a couple of years back, and I watched that back through the other night, and what comes across is just an average guy that was living the dream. He'd got the job he wanted. Theology said yesterday the family wanted everything, and he accepted it with the humility, and he just got on with things. The sort of guy you could stand next to in the bar and have a drink with, and then you'll see him changing football history the day afterwards. Fantastic.
That says it all. That says it all. And obviously we go from one legend to some wannabe legends when we talk about the transfer window. We've got players, as is always going to be the case with the stock of some of the players at Celtic being linked with moves away. We've got a couple of players come in. We've got Gershon, the Israeli. We've got Rogic, I think that's how you pronounce it, the Australian, who, by all accounts, has the makings of a superstar. Know a bit less about Gershon. And then we've got the continual rumours around Hooper, who's been described quite annoyingly as a contract rebel by any outlet out there for exercising what any of us would do in the same position, which is to try and get as much money off our employer as possible. You've got Wanyama, and the appearance of Sir Fergie on the Evie Fallon's funeral at Celtic Park, sparking the rumours that there's a £10 million bid in the offing there. And then the Twitter went aflame when the team was announced on Saturday, and it was Zaluska in goals and no mention of Forster. All of a sudden, he was packing his bags and off, and didn't pick up an injury in training. And it's that kind of inflammatory situation. It makes the transfer window fantastic for a short period of time, but it's all very much gorging on this kind of famine and feast. But what I think's clear is we've done a good bit of business early in the window, a centre-half and a midfielder in there. We'd like to see a striker, and we've got potentially maybe one, maybe two players going out. What's your views on that, guys?
I don't think MD's going to go in January.
Rumours are there. You know what,
Ralph, let me just interrupt you there. It's up that way.
I'm going to bring Hector in, who's actually now made himself available. So this is going to be like a E-Tim's podcast first. We're going to bring in someone live.
Is this like Bono dialing the president?
This is what it was like. Now we need to tell him he's live as soon as he comes on. Otherwise, you know what he's like.
You're live on Channel 4.
Exactly. Albeit he might not actually pick up now that he's being dialed. How you doing, Hector? We're live and we're already recording. Nice of you to finish that job and join us. We've got Desi and Ralph on as well, and we're just talking about the transfer window. So Ralph was in mid-flow. He's got a new headset, which meant he couldn't hear me telling them that you were trying to dial in, and it's just a shambles. But anyway, you just need to pick up. You're going to have to wing it. It's kind of like something like that. Yeah, look, we've already talked about Brian McLaughlin tonight. Anyway, Ralph, you were saying?
I can't remember now. It's been such a while.
You don't think anyone will go in January?
Right, because the team's settled. It looks very much like Lennon's man management skills have talked those that had a few doubts into staying. There's a lot to look forward to, and people are saying that we'll lose money if Hooper goes away in the summer instead of January. But the thing is, that doesn't matter, because the team spirit, the whole thing has not... You can't break it up at this time in the season. They come back from Spain, they looked relaxed, they looked refreshed, and Dundee United and Hearts were swept to one side. Compared with some of the stuttering home performances before the break, they looked like a new team.
I hate to burst your bubble, but Mo Bangura's already away.
Oh, that's it.
I don't know if you want to go and maybe cry in a corner or something.
That's it, we're doomed.
So he basically scores one goal and then somebody snaps him up?
Well, that's basically it. He's off to Elfsborg. I don't know, Paul, if Desi, you'd like to maybe pick up on the pun that's available there.
No, I think we can leave midget Star Trek fans alone tonight.
Okay, then. Or tiny Star Trek fans, they must be feeling really bad about themselves just now. Anyway, so what's your views, Desi? You know, we've talked about, you know, Ralph thinks there's no one going to be leaving. We've brought two in. Any more, do you think?
Well, again, I'm the kind of eternal pessimist regards the whole Celtic thing, and I know everyone hates the January window, especially managers of a club that has players on form. But like Gary Hooper, you kind of if you just go like in general the forums etc. You see, it's like quite mixed reaction. People are quite happy to get the money in and let them go, and you find yourself thinking, well, who else is going to actually score goals? There was some guy on Radio Clyde the other night complaining that Hooper was not the be-all and end-all, he was not Henrik Larsson, and he isn't even the top goal scorer in Scotland at the moment, it's some guy from Inverness, as if it, like, basically Hooper was a dud, and he would quite happy to give him up in a minute. Like Celtic, like Sam Rass isn't going to get you the goals, Hooper will get you, especially when about that box. Anthony Stokes is just coming back and he's under immense pressure to actually just raise his game enough to actually justify a contract and not be an forgotten man, like quite a few of them at Celtic Park at the moment. Lassad, he's hoping for more time. So again, they're going to bring someone else in now that Bangura's away to put more pressure. Miku, God knows what's happened there, but he's also been written off. And Tony Watt, again, you kind of put that pressure on that young guy. Hopefully Hooper stays, but I wouldn't be surprised. Lennon did say in the last 10 days of the window it can get a bit crazy, and I wouldn't be surprised if Celtic got an offer that they felt they could refuse, given the fact that he's looking to be away in the summer. I know, Hector, you've got a point of view that differs from me regards Hooper.
Yeah, sorry, what was the opening question?
What we were saying is, does Hector know it's left for waiting and right for eating? And then we started talking about the transfer window. So the point being is you know, where are we at? We've got a couple of players in. We've got a couple of players being seriously linked with moves away.
Hooper is obviously the topic under discussion there. Every player has his price. I don't think that's, that's just basic common sense. I think where Celtic are different now, and I think that's maybe the last year or so, where the scouting model appears to be very successful. We're getting these players in for £1 million, £2 million, and Key was the first one, and now you can see several of them going and making the club a lot of money. But I think with the European run this year, it's changed the scene a bit. We've now got some good funds sitting there, so it's maybe we can maybe step back a wee touch and don't have to jump into accepting the first offer that I think in the recent past they went, you know what, that ticks the boxes, £5 million, £6 million. I think we're in a strong position with Hooper. Yep, he's got 18 months to go. But I don't think there's any rush to sell. If we got offered £6 million, why take that for someone who's done it in the Champions League? You can sell in the summer, maybe for maybe £5 or £6 million. But we've got a better chance of beating Juventus. Okay, it's going to be really difficult, but you want to keep your best players up till the summer, surely. And then again, if somebody offers a daft offer like £9-10 million, then I'm sure the club would take that.
Yeah, indeed. And players in, so we've signed Gershon and we've got Rogic from what's it, something Coast Mariners or something like that, one of those big Oceanic teams. Any other moves that are we aware of? Anything else going on? You know, this boy from the MLS, Agudelo or something. Any other strikers we're keeping an eye on? Should Hooper run away?
There were reports that we had someone opening a Mars bar there.
We had
the reports that basically Celtic had been asked if they were interested in Dan Bent and Stuart Downing, I believe his name is. But again, I can't see that happening. The guy, the American boy, apparently it was the rise of the offer, yet no paper can tell you what the offer was or exactly what's happening. So I think they're just making stuff up. One of the ones is trying to fill space. Regards Celtic bringing people in, where would you be looking to strengthen right now? Up front, again, we discussed that, but carry on.
I think there needs to be a goalkeeper in. I think there's another one needed there, because if anybody's to go away this January, I think Forster's the one that'll go. Manchester United have been up looting, and people are saying it's Wanyama they're looting at, and with Forster being injured, probably is nothing. It's maybe even mischief making in my imagination running away with me. But Ferguson's not happy with the keeper he's got, and I think if anybody's available, it'll be Forster. Zaluska used to be my favourite keeper out of the two, but Forster's come on in leaps and bounds. But an injury to one of them means it was short, very short, and as the season goes towards the end, we don't want to be in a position where, is it Robbie Thompson, the fellow that was on the bench the last couple of games?
Yeah.
We don't want to be in the position where we get the David Marshall scenario before. Do you remember the Barcelona game many years back? That could completely unravel a season if something goes wrong there. So I'd feel better with, you know, like a John Buddidge type keeper, somebody that's been around the block a bit. That
Jonathan Gould must be available, is it not? Somewhere in the Hobbit land.
If you're looking for an experienced goalkeeper, you know, available relatively cheap, that boy Dundee's played well against us the last couple of games. You know,
good luck, Rab.
He's done all right. You know,
I don't think any of the main players will go this January. Again, caveat, unless we get a crazy offer. So, and by that, Wanyama, for example, he's made it clear to various people that he's no intention of leaving until at least the summer. So he'll be there. Again, unless it's a crazy offer. I think Hooper will be there also. Unless somebody offers £8 million plus, I think he'll be there. Because I think from a professional perspective, there's a big part to play here. These guys are playing the last 16 in the Champions League. They're not stupid. They're in good money at Celtic. They know they'll get their transfer. They're getting win bonuses every week, just about guaranteed, now from now until the end of the season. They're in good bucks already, so I just don't see it happening. I think we're bringing a couple of players. Lennon's made it clear he wants a left-back. I forget the guy's name. This Nigerian left-back was heavily linked. So I'd imagine there may be some truth in that. But I think the boy's away at the African Nations just now with their own Celtic player. And he'd also mentioned that a left-sided winger, a bit of pace. So I think he's kind of put his cards on the table then, in the two positions he wants. And I don't see he's breaking the bank or doing anything daft. And why should we? The model's working really, really well for us. And long may it continue. And but again, back to Hooper. No, I think Hooper will be there. Just a personal opinion, I just think he'll be there come the end of the transfer window.
Can anyone actually think of a successful January transfer window signing?
Robbie Keane got there.
That Polish guy last year, who I think made two substitution appearances, and he was meant to be preparing for the Euros.
Well, Robbie Keane got player of the year when he joined us in January.
After 4 minutes on the pitch.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, you know, I mean,
I think the last one was probably Barry Robson. Obviously, he was a midfielder. Maybe going back 4 or 5 years, we brought him in January, and we all kind of laughed. Why are we paying $1 million for him? And he was probably one of the most, you know, important reasons. Is Derek Johnston on the line? Is he Mars Bars in the background?
My wife just came in and stole my wine gums.
Hey, DJ, how you doing, you fat baby? Anyway,
your wine gums? I really don't want to know what your wine gums are, because that sounds disgusting.
But Barry Robson came back, again, no striker, but he would have been...
He is available right now. He's been freed in Canada.
Aye, Vancouver Whitecaps have let
him go, haven't they? To be fair to Barry Robson, I think most of us thought, what a shit signing, but that one match when he done Christian Daly in the first 30 seconds, that was worth every penny of that transfer fee, wasn't it?
And that man scored in his debut against Barcelona, did they know? Was that his debut? No, it was Aberdeen. He scored
the first kick. First kick of the ball.
Doesn't get better than that. Very good player. I tell you the last player we signed in January who's been a success, Lustig, but it took him a year to find his feet. We signed him last January, was it?
He's been excellent, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's been absolutely top class.
But a classic example, signing Scandinavian players in January is just no use if you want them to hit the ground running. You could rhyme off the Scandinavians that have failed. But we stuck with him and he's been brilliant ever since we brought Sardani in to look after him. So yeah, I mean, I think where we're at, we're speculating worse than the papers, but the bottom line is we hope nobody's going to go. If the money's right, there's a chance somebody will go. We're going to maybe debate a wee bit later about who's the money right for, and I know Ralph's got some strong feelings on that. But I think the bottom line is we might bring in one more, depending on the movement. But there's nothing. I don't think there's anything major going to happen. We're steady as it goes. And as you say, Hector, there's a model there. There'll be people lined up should we have to go for them. There'll be a list of people. But there's no need to panic. We're 12 points or something clear in the league. We've got two big games to look forward to in the Champions League. And if we get through them, then it's history making as far as the club's concerned, and at least in the modern format of the competition.
Just one final thing before you move on. It was regarding Wanyama, and I know we'd updated the site maybe 6 or 8 weeks ago, and remember we had the Graham Hunter session that quite a lot of fans went to in Glasgow. For those who don't know him, it's the guy who does the Spanish football, the Scottish guys from Aberdeen. But he is obviously with the bricks at Barcelona, the bricks that is, and he was saying that Barcelona had made formal contact with Celtic. And not only that, about Wanyama, not only that, but in his view, all the major clubs in Europe, i.e. the ones with all the money, have also notified Celtic of their interest. So he says, look, make no mistake, this guy's the business, and all the top clubs in Europe know he's the business. So I think we're going to get an absolute fortune for him come the summer.
And that would be good, because then you've had the guy for a couple of years, he's blossomed. And the money we make from him, we continue to build this project we've got on. And that's the way we've got to look at it from our club. Okay, so moving on. And that seamless link that you broke there, Hector, that has just ruined my whole night, but I'll let you away with it, was moving on to the actual competitions that we're still in. And there's a quadruple out there for us. Sometimes people talk about, you know, winning the treble is an important thing, but we're in the last 16 of the Champions League as well. And, you know, we can laugh and joke about how it's unlikely we'll win it, but it was unlikely Greece would win Euro 2004. It was unlikely Bradford would get to the League Cup final. And it was unlikely Eden Hazard would ever get sent off for kicking a ball boy, or, as it was in this case, a ball man. So, prospects for the rest of the season, I'd say the league's done and dusted. We've got a couple of cup competitions domestically to go through, and I think the big one, Juve, and that's not far away now. How do you think we're shaping up for that, Desi?
Well, first of all, I'd like to correct you, because you were wrong when you said you believe Champions League is a big one. Everyone concerned with Celtic knows that the big trophy at the end of the season is, of course, Manager of the Year. And at the moment, the front runners, according to the Scottish press, are Terry Butcher and Derek Adams. I still believe they're still getting a rating. Always, I always just love to keep tabs on this, because I've had Graham Spears so far celebrating how great it was that Terry Butcher stayed. So I think we can guarantee that even if he finishes second and he's only 30 points behind Celtic, after Celtic, say, getting to the semis of the Champions League, you can guarantee Neil Lennon still won't win Manager of the Year. But that's just a personal thing. Regards the trophies, I'd kind of raised this point to you earlier on for the podcast, because I quite enjoyed a phone-in the other night where a St Mirren fan came on, and basically the guy was full of optimism, and it wasn't this being like blasé, get up your Celtic. He was basically saying he appreciates 9 times out of 10 St Mirren will get cuffed with Celtic or get beat with Celtic, but he remembers a few years ago Celtic scoring 7 and then getting out to St Mirren in the league and then playing St Mirren a couple of days later in the cup and getting out to a Billy Mehmet, a penalty I think it was, a Billy Mehmet goal, and that kind of raised my interest again for this Sunday's semi-final. I thought, now, that way you kind of forget about the League Cup because it's so stupidly organised for this stage in the season. The thing, I thought, oh, that's great, I forgot about it. Totally by the by, because you do get wrapped up in the European thing. So I'm quite looking forward to Sunday to see again how Lennon's going to approach it. We've had a good start the last two games, but again, is he going to rest a few players? You know Foster will not play, but is he going to try different formations? Because I know Hector's been enjoying Nick Lennon's different formations, the 4-3-3s, etc., and the 3-5-2s, trying to kind of change things for whatever Europe's going to throw at them. So, as you said, the league's kind of done. I'm quite looking forward to the League Cup this Sunday. I think that would be a nice wee kind of bit of excitement for me. Regarding the Scottish Cup, again, most of the focus, really, for me at the moment, is on Tannadice regarding the Scottish Cup, which I'll come to later on, as we've discussed. So regarding Celtic Scottish Cup, it's always good to have that flagship end of season game. But I'd be quite happy if we can get two out before, I'd be over the moon. And if that's a League Cup in the league, I'd be quite happy. And if we do ourselves justice in the Champions League, that's great. So I'm not asking for much. 2 out of 4 will do we.
Excellent. That's almost optimistic for you.
Sorry.
Manager of the Year, obviously, which came in kind of a bit left field there. And Hector, you're what Desi's kind of suggesting there is you like all sorts of positions, which is interesting.
That's why he was late.
Yeah, and just as a point, I want you to listen to something, Ralph. I know you're enjoying these kind of noises down there in Stoke. That's a wagon wheel I'm opening up. Hector, you know, in all seriousness, we've been seeing Lennon trying out a few things, and clearly he's taking advantage of the domestic superiority to have a look at a few things ahead of what is massive games against Juventus. What's your prospects feeling like for the rest of the season? Are you a treble man, or will you settle for a double?
It's interesting. I think at the start of the season we'd had this discussion. We're obviously saying the league, because of the situation right now, would be guaranteed. It's a strange thing with Celtic fans. I don't think we're overly greedy. I think that's an old Cohen, old Rangers thing, isn't it, about the treble and get it up. I think we're more, we want to play good football, we want to win, but we don't win the treble. It's no the end of the world. I mean, we should win at least 2 of the trophies. But I'm with Desi. I'm the league, absolutely, and one of the domestic cups. Win the both of them, magic. But the Champions League's changed the situation this season, I think, significantly. Number one, by getting there, which clearly was a big thing for the club. But then not only getting there, as we know, qualifying for the last 16 and also giving Barcelona arguably 2 of their hardest games of the season. And if you look at how they've been doing, apart from last weekend, that is, in Spain this year, I think they've had the best start ever in their history. So I think that should give us confidence. Juventus again would be favourites, no two ways about it, just for obvious reasons. But for the first time of our three attempts to get beyond the last 16 of the Champions League, the first time I think it was Milan, and they beat his Jamali in extra time over there when Gordon Strachan was a manager. Then Barcelona, like the year after that, when they kind of gave us a bit of a doing, it was 4-2 in aggregate, but it was a bit of a doing.
No.
I think this time, cards on the table. If the squad is fully fit, the key players, Victor Wanyama, the key defenders, the big keeper, if they're all available, I think we're going to do it. I think we'll get the quarters of the Champions League. There we go. And that's before I've drunk a bottle of wine tonight.
Well, why would you be drinking bottles of wine at 9 o'clock on a Thursday morning, eh?
Because I'm from Shelton, James. That's what we do.
and you know, you're right to the optimism. And I remember us sitting at the start of the season on one of our previous podcasts, and we were laughing, not ITV football, tweeting, laughing levels of how we would be quite happy just to still be in Europe after the Champions League group stages, and we were delighted at having got through the Helsingborg ties impressively as we had over the two legs. And then Ralph, you came in and said, no, I think we'll qualify. I think we'll get 10 points. It was pretty much what you said. And I think you based it on a draw away from home and three home wins. And, you know, we all kind of chortled away and thought, you know, that's the naivety of youth and stuff. But you were right.
Did we all call him a daft bastard?
I think that's exactly what we said. But, you know,
that was naivety of youth, daft bastard, pretty much the same thing.
Absolutely. So, do you share Hector's optimism?
Absolutely. We've got a way of playing in Europe that's completely different from the way we play at home in the domestic games. I'm more worried about playing St Mirren on Sunday, because if you look at it as a microcosm, St Mirren are the underdogs, Celtic are the big team in Scotland, the team that everybody wants to beat. These teams now have got a chance in one-off matches of getting to cup finals, of winning silverware, and of having good days out. If you take that to the next level of Champions League, we're the underdogs. We're the ones that are involved in one-off cup matches. All right, it's home and away, but one-off cup matches where anything can happen. And there's absolutely no reason why we can't pull one over Juventus. If everybody plays to their strengths, if everybody goes out, treats it seriously, does the job they're asked to do, looks out for each other, if Hooper takes the chances that are put in front of him, Samaras runs out of defence with the ball, holding the ball, taking the pressure off, Wanyama, Brown dominating midfield, and Effie Ambrose comes back in one piece, Charlie Mulgrew manages to put the ball 40 yards exactly to where he wants. There's no reason why we can't go ahead. Quarterfinals, semi-finals, even a final. I know it's tough to dream, but if you didn't have dreams, you'd have nothing to look forward to, and they wouldn't come true, would they?
Well, there you go. I'm almost welling up a wee bit here.
Ralph, did you used to read the stories in Jack and Ori?
Mrs. Malf's in for a good night tonight. So I think we're all there with optimism. I'm the same, you know. I'll take it. I'll take two trophies. The league and the Champions League will do me. I'm not greedy. And it's nice to spread the trophies around like we did last year in the domestic scene, you know. So, obviously, the rest of the season kind of takes care of itself. But one question we threw out earlier on Twitter was, what would you like us to talk about tonight? And we've already talked about the transfer window, which a few people wanted us to talk about. But one chap, I think St. Louis or something his name was, I don't know, I don't get too in deep into this. I just let Hector and Desi do the whole Jekyll and Hyde thing on Twitter. He wanted us to talk about a standing area at Celtic Park. And this is a subject quite close to my heart, because when I first started going to the games, you had to stand, and it was brilliant. You could move up and down the jungle, and you could go to the end where we were shooting it all the time. And my oldest is five, he's coming six this year, and he'll be going to Celtic Park for the first time at some point, either before the end of the season or certainly at the start of next season. And I would love for him to do the standing experience, but he can't, and I think the sitting experience would bore him. So I'm a big advocate of a standing area at Celtic Park. I would like to see the bottom half of the North Stand just become standing, potentially even the top half as well. That's my personal view, but I'll throw that out on the table. Ralph, you might struggle to stand for 90 minutes, but how do you feel about standing area back at Celtic Park?
Have a refreshment, and there's absolutely no way we'd be able to stand for an hour and a half. Someone has fallen asleep during the game. I remember the old days, the jungle and stuff like that. I say the old days, it's not that long ago. I remember standing in the jungle. It was fun. The atmosphere was fantastic. You would end up miles away from where you started. You could stand next to your pals. That's the one thing I've got against Seton, incidentally, is that you'll travel up with 14, 15 people and you're all dotted about the ground. You don't see each other during the game. You can't talk about the game with your pals. In the standing area, you could move to a different part of the ground if you wanted a better view. For kids, do we really want more kids crushed the way that we used to be when we were wee, with people picking up on us and people peeing on us? I don't know. That's that party I would like to leave behind, but for the atmosphere, you couldn't beat being in a jungle on a big night.
I mean, yeah, there's nothing wrong with a bit of pee, and some people actually pay good money for to get peed on, so we might find our attendances go up. Hector?
Are we back to why Hector was late again?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you notice how I then referenced Hector straight away. So, Hector, you've got a couple of young kids, and you're going to be a granddad soon. What's your take on standing?
It's a young man's game, isn't it? No, I think it's... Well, let's put it this way. You watch the Bundesliga. I don't know if you get a chance to see it on ESPN, and they've got standing areas, they've got bigger crowds than we've got here. They've got, I don't know, is it Dortmund's got 80,000, Munich 60, 70? They've got standing areas, and their fans are as fanatical as anyone, and it appears to work well there. So times have moved on. I think a lot more safety conscious, even with a standing area. I think we should have it. Maybe not the full stadium, maybe behind the goals, maybe behind the goals at the Celtic end, the Jock Stein end, but the ideal place to do it. And why not? You know, do it sensibly. Let the young team jump about, do the lateral movement without the council and God knows who else coming down on their back. So, aye, I feel supportive of it.
The standing areas over there are different, though. They're individual standing spaces where the seats go for bigger games, you know, for the Champions League games. The seats fold back up and they're locked in position and you're standing between your two arms. And then obviously on Champions League games, the seat comes down and it becomes a normal seat again. That would be similar to just standing, like you do at Pittodrie when you go up there. You can stand all through the game. Easter Road, sometimes you'll get away with it as well.
Yeah, but I think that the issue there is, and Hector kind of alluded to it, it's the safety certificate that the stadium's given, or maybe the authorities hide behind as an excuse to you know, attack certain factions of the sport, depending on your viewpoint. Desi, do you want to stand?
I want to stand. To be honest, it doesn't really bother me that much. I take my daughter to the football. She's 21 now, so I've taken her to football all her football days. She only knew the kind of seats at Celtic Park, and it never did her any harm, and she always enjoyed it. I think we can get a bit romantic about the past, but looking towards the future, I want to kind of go back. Looking towards the future, if the club were really serious about this, they do of course have at least a 2-year window to maybe experiment, because given the fact that Rangers are no longer going to be regular visitors during the season at Celtic Park, we don't need to give up such a big away end, a big away accommodation for them visiting. So what the club could do is always maybe try and kind of develop a standing test area behind that goal. It's not where we gave up to away fans and say, right, it goes for, say, the next two seasons. If it works, implement it. If it doesn't work well, we'll have no loss. Basically, only maybe a couple of thousand people have to find new seats. And given the fact that we keep getting told how the season books aren't up at 50,000, well, I don't think there'll be any problem finding anybody who would be getting moved, say, like, say, the 147 or whatever it is, but just behind the goal with the kind of kids bit I used to go to. I'm sure they could try a standing area there, and it wouldn't impact away fans either, because the away fans would still have their wee corner. So I think that's something the club could maybe look at.
Indeed.
Okay. We could also use these early round cup games, you know, the domestic ones, where they're maybe closing off the top half of the stadium. They could try something like that then. Maybe to encourage people to go to it, and they could have a wee look at it and monitor how it goes on in that circumstance.
Yeah.
I think the standing element, I think it's common sense to, if they can get the certificate sorted, and I don't see why they can't, to have a section dedicated, maybe of several thousand fans in that space to do that. But I think that's just a part of the overall match day experience that the club's got to look at, because to be honest with you, it's pretty rubbish in terms of, if you go abroad or go to the States or go to Europe for football, America for their various sports, you can arrive there a couple of hours before the match. There's facilities there where you can go there, you can have a few beers, you can have a nice lounge area. You're not getting charged extra money to go there. You've got good food at a reasonable price. And I think what's on offer at Celtic Park just isn't good enough. And the standing area is obviously part of the participation for the game, but what is it we get? 18 to 20 home games a season, roughly. Maybe a couple more than that out of the whole year. We should be doing far better than that, offering better facilities. Even look outside the ground. I know the Commonwealth Games' job next year, but you look at that big area behind the Lisbon Lions stand. I mean, that opportunity there to do something with that, to make that an access area with a club, I don't know, a club bar, a club restaurant, it'd be jam-packed, you know, every home match. And I just think sometimes as a club, we just don't take advantage of just the basic things that stare us right in the face. For me, there's a few things that clubs should be doing far, far better.
We'll come on to that later on, potentially under a new section, which I'm going to keep as a surprise for you because you didn't join the start of the call. And I didn't want to mention that again to make you feel bad about not joining the start of the call, but I have done now, so sorry about that.
Just edit that out.
Okay, we've only got a couple of things to go, and actually we're going to go into that new section. So we've got the Twitter bag, but before we get into that, we've decided to add a new section to the calls, and that's going to be the good, the bad and the ugly. On the ugly, well, the ugly of the subject kind of takes care of itself, and we'll come to that. The bad, well, that can be something new every week, and Ralph's going to come into a rant about something in a sec. Which means, Hector, you're stuck with the good. What's good? What are you happy about right now about your club, the football, the game?
I think since the new year, since they come back from the break in Spain, the last two home games, I was at the game on Saturday against Hearts, and although it was 2-1, with 5 minutes to go, reality is it could have been 6-7-1. We played really well. I managed to watch the game against United the other night, and again, I thought the team were outstanding. So I think the football since the break has been excellent, and obviously last 16 coming up, 2 or 3 weeks' time, I think the manager's really switched on. So I think overall the club, I'm chuffed to bits with Celtic, with Neil Lennon, and how things are going.
Excellent. And the bad, Ralph?
Well, it's more of a hypothetical bad. Just supposing the worst case scenario this January happens. We lose Hooper, £8 to £10 million. We lose Wanyama, £10 to £15 million. But we replace them with the, say, Rogic, however you pronounce it, takes a part of Wanyama, and Tony Watt, Anthony Stokes comes up to the plate and fills in for Gary Hooper. Right, now, the club's £20-25 million better off through Europe. That's another £15-20 million maybe going into the pot from transfers. We're not going to break the structure we have now. We're not going to change a policy of buying cheap and selling. That money's not going to go on another player that will break the wage structure and upset the people that are already there. So where is the money going to go to? Is it going to mean cheaper season books? Or maybe a freebie on the end of it? Perhaps the food will be a bit better or a bit more accessible? Or cheaper season books for kids, or free season books for kids, whatever. Is the money going to come back into the support, or will it go into directors' pockets? I know it sounds a wee bit churlish, but if we've got a player that's got 18 months left in his contract, sure, we don't want to lose money on him, but is it really necessary that we sell for crazy money just for the sake of selling for crazy money?
Yeah, okay, good. So that's the bad. And the ugly, Daisy.
Oh, thanks very much. I've been worse, I suppose. We have tried to avoid mentioning Rangers and discussing Rangers on previous podcasts, but I think sometimes this deserves to get a mention. We could, of course, discuss Charles Green's latest roundabout with the fans, especially the Quarry Bar, which was hilarious. But in respect to ugly, I just have to ask, what has happened to the infamous Scottish Presbyterian sense of humour? Because the Rangers fans seem to have totally lost the plot. First of all, I saw they were complaining that a Peter Head player who just happened to have an altercation, his boot happened to hit Frank Sandizer's face, and the guy tweeted a joke saying it was only part of the game I re-watched. Suddenly they were up in arms and demanding an apology. So they had to get an apology from Peterhead themselves regards that. The young players been spoken to and been told never to basically talk about the games on Twitter again. And then today, which was a total peach, was your standard People's Front of Judea Rangers Supporters Association spokesman. There's about 20 of them these days, I think, Rangers supporters groups. And they've come out to complain that the D90, some rogue Arabs, meaning the Pentagon will go on the phone next, some rogue Arab fans have decided they were going to hand out Craig White masks for when Rangers come to visit in the Scottish Cup. And basically Rangers have demanded an inquiry because this is insightful and it could cause trouble. I mean, the sheer hilariousness of Rangers fans saying something could annoy them and cause them trouble is something that would make the biggest television in Manchester quake in its boots. But I just thought it was hilarious that how sad they've got now that they're picking up on everything. We used to be the paranoid ones and now they have taken it to a whole new level.
And for purposes there, that rogue Arabs, we don't promote racism of any kind on here. So if anybody thinks that Desi was talking about a particular race, I'm talking about the Tangerine wearing Dundonians.
I'm just talking about the reason I said rogue Arabs, obviously Arabs meaning Dundee United fans, was that Dundee United club had to come out and distance themselves. Saying that this basically is a website, I think, basically a group of guys in a forum. These guys are not officially associated with Dundee United. And you're like, really? Whatever happened to people just having a laugh and smiling about things?
Absolutely.
Everybody's just so sensitive these days.
Absolutely. So that's the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know. Worthy entrance this podcast round. I won't say this week, this month, this year, given the irregularity of our get-togethers. So that leaves us moving on to the final section of the pod tonight, which is, of course, as always, the Twitter bag. And Desi, you sent out a plea to our acolytes looking for some feedback on.
I did. Basically, we had a few suggestions for questions, but Hector the Arnwright was leading, was basically had everyone laughing and getting some great suggestions in respect to Charles Green. Basically, he's been doing the rounds with the fans and he met up with fans. I don't know if it was like, say, the associations, but basically, like, people only follow, and basically everyone picked up. And basically, the guy's been promising the moon. He's going to be at Rangers for the next 11 years. When eventually leaves Rangers, they won't be playing in the SPL of Scotland. They'll basically be playing on the moon, I think, against an intergalactic space jam, 11-star Michael Jordan's son. They're going to announce a new shirt sponsor. They're going to basically the stadium rights, but of course, according to Scottish media, they will include the word, just including the word Ibrox somewhere, makes it okay for every Rangers fan, apparently. And of course, the small news that Rangers won't turn a profit, which is not necessarily the same as Rangers making a loss, apparently. They just won't turn a profit. Everything's been very selectively basically spoken about in very selective tones. So basically, on the Twitter tonight, we asked the Ethan's net followers on Twitter what else could Charles Green possibly promise Rangers fans that they would believe. Bedford, I've sent you a few. Hopefully you've picked them up. If you'd like to read one of yours out, did you get them?
Did you email them to me?
No, I sent them on the Skype thing, but I can just start them. Basically, we had Tommy at Visarian 67. Charles Green will promise he will change his name to Charles Blue when they get to the SPL. Scouse Tins, basically Charles Green will promise him, it says, high season ticket. Which basically gave me quite a funny image. Is it a season ticket in the shape of a pie, or is it a pie with every season ticket, which you can imagine Alan McCoy's been over the moon with? Sid Fishies, at Sid Fishies, he's knocked back inquiries from three EPL clubs about Alan McCoy's as technical director, brackets, car parks only, closed brackets. Dominic, who's out at Alpha Force, we're turning the big house into a super stadium and casino. What do you mean it's been done? Hashtag Moonbeam. It's a quick one. Chris, 1888, anything positive whatsoever, seriously, there is nothing he couldn't promise Rangers fans that they wouldn't swallow. Robin Gibb, I like this. A Charles Green has promised that Rod Stewart has been booked for the end of season party.
Wait a minute, so Robin Gibb is talking about Rod Stewart?
Robert Gibb.
Robert Gibb.
You put your start of the night fever shows away.
Yeah.
J-Mac C66. Christmas has now moved to the 12th of July. 1888 at Stephen. Apart from the African Cup of Nations, there isn't much left that a Charles Green hasn't promised. Kierdom says the Charles Green really invented the wheel, or he actually put tith wheel in a nice Yorkshire accent on Twitter. And he also wrote, is Charles Green really in talks with Barcelona about Sevco taking their unused players? And Charles Green will also charge Barcelona millions for the privilege. And then Sideshow 79, Charles Green says that 500 million fans have each sent him in £1 each. So that would do his non-profits very well. We've got the old classic from Jakey Boy 58. Bids going in for Messi and Ronaldo when the unjust embargo is lifted. Both of them were boyhood Rangers fans and they hate Celtic. P.S. Beckham may also sign. Unjust embargo, that sounds like an 80s band. And also the final one, I think, sums it up. Leo McCann at McCann Leo. We don't need any more Charles Green suggestions. The truth is way more funnier than fiction.
Too true. And there you go. And anybody wondering when we've recorded this show and how live it is, if you're watching Barcelona Malaga, you'll know that Barcelona have just gone one up after 8 minutes.
Is it a possible Rangers signing it scored?
No, it wasn't any of the good players. It looks like it was Pedro. Pedro Rodriguez.
That's him. Just for clarity, that's him just now kiboshed any potential move to Ibrox. The guy Pedro who scored, he just blessed himself. So no doubt the Rangers supporters trust, as Desi was saying about on the phone just now, demanding an apology from Barcelona tomorrow.
Well, I think actually the apology should come from Sky, to be fair, because the man's blessing himself in a country where it's allowed, but Sky have showed it on TV over here, so it's their issue. Yeah? Maybe we need to debate that in the next podcast.
Somewhere Graham Spears has just sat up and went, why are Celtic fans getting upset again? Why can't we all just get along?
Yes, very much so. Anyway, so that concludes tonight's festivities. So thanks a lot, guys, for joining. Lots of good chat tonight. And we will be back sometime before July, August 2014. So thank you to Ralph Malf.
Thanks. See you now.
Desimond.
Yes.
And Hector Bandido, who I think already left because he may have been touching cloth. You don't know. It was good of him to make those last 45 minutes. Good night, everybody.
Good night.